could you start by telling us your name, your business name, and the county where your business operates?
Yeah, so my name is Ryan Bethay, and the name of the company is called Oysters Carolina. We're a farm on the north side of Harkers Island by Cape Lookout, and we operate in Carteret County.
Great, thank you. And so just to get a little bit of context, what aquaculture species do you raise, and is that species one that lives in the Carteret County area naturally?
Yes, ma'am. So on the East Coast, except for Maine, we actually have to grow the native species, which is Crastostrea virginicus,
mm-hmm.
otherwise known as the eastern oyster.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you see them, whenever you see an oyster on our North Carolina coast, that's exactly what it is. And it is, you know, it's delicious. It grows in these waters, you know, originally. So they seem to do pretty well. There's not a lot of mortality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you treat them right, and you know, they're a pretty oyster.
Okay, that's really interesting that you call them pretty. I like that. You clearly have a kind of love for your work.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be doing it if I didn't.
Mhm. And so, kind of related to like your love for the oyster and your care for it, how do you grow the species? Like, is it in open water or is it in ponds or do you do it a different way?
So, North Carolina is kind of unique in the fact that our waters are public trust.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they're open to anybody who's a North Carolina citizen. And so what we do is we actually lease water from the state, and we can buy, sell, and trade it. And then we pay rent on the water, but again, we can't keep anybody off of it. So people are welcome to kayak through our lease or walk through it or boat through it. We grow our oysters in the Sound. We're fairly unique in two areas where we grow oysters. One is the fact that where we are, there is a lot of flow, tidally and just from the currents. And so the ocean water comes up through the west of the island, and then it spits out the east, and it goes right by our oyster farm, and it brings lots of fresh ocean water. That makes our lease very, very salty. And then the other thing that's unique about our growing waters is the fact that it's intertidal. So what that means is that the water actually, you know, sometimes the oysters are exposed. So at high tide, they're underwater, and at low tide, they're exposed. You know, oysters are intertidal species. So it really helps grow a really good oyster because they're in their natural habitat,
mm-hmm.
Instead of, you know, being fully submerged most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, where we are, you know, the water can be anywhere from completely ebbed out, so zero, and dry, all the way to about 4 or 5 feet on our lease.
Oh, wow. And that's really interesting because I didn't realize, like, how much intricacy goes into even just the habitat in which these oysters are grown and how that can impact them. So that's really interesting.
Yeah, yeah. It's. I think any oyster farmer will tell you that the site selection, where you choose to grow your oysters, is the most important thing.
That's good to know. And again, I guess kind of on this kind of like idea of like maintaining the oysters. So, what kind of work do you do to maintain and keep your business running?
Well, it's a lot of work, first of all. in terms of with the oysters, we do a lot of cleaning. We do a lot of sorting. And, you know, since we're in such a salty environment, because we get that fresh ocean water, we have a lot of different organisms that grow on our oysters and our oyster cages and all of our gear. And the stuff that grows on there, that's called biofouling.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what that does, that affects the flow of the flow of the water to the oysters. And when you don't have good flow going to the oysters, they don't grow as well. They don't get as much dissolved oxygen. So, you know, you'll get higher mortality rates. And then, you know, for my business, I spend a lot of time driving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we deliver our oysters anywhere in North Carolina with free delivery. And we also pull our oysters out of the water the same day that we deliver them. So people order oysters from us anywhere in North Carolina. That morning, I go out, or we go out, there. So I'd like to spend a lot more time on the water, but unfortunately, a lot of my job is on the road delivering these wonderful oysters.
That's really interesting, and I wouldn't have thought that driving would be such an important aspect of this, but I guess you're right. Like, if you want to deliver them yourself, then that's something you really have to consider.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And so, on the topic of, like, equipment, which you clearly use a vehicle quite often, what other kinds of equipment and resources did you need to even start your business?
Well, again, depending on your site, you're going to need different equipment. So if you're going to be working with 8 feet of water, then you're going to need a crane and oyster cages and a davit and things like that, a boat. With us being intertidal, you can actually walk out there if you have to. And but we do have a 19-foot skiff. We also have something called a 12-foot sneak boat. It's for duck hunting primarily, but we load oysters on there and use a trolling motor for that. And then we have several kayaks that we use as well. In terms of actually growing the oysters, we have cages. We use 2-foot by 3-foot cages, and we'll double stack them, and they sit on the bottom. And again, when it's low tide, they're exposed to kind of dry out the oysters. And the reason we use cages that are that size is because when I started this business, I was the only one that was going to work the oysters.
Oh, wow.
So it had to be something where I could do it all myself. What we do at Oysters Carolina, we try to be 100% craft, mm-hmm. which is kind of a played out word, but it just kind of means like use with your hands. And so we don't use any cranes. We don't use any mechanical equipment. It's a kayak, and then, blood, sweat, and tears is what we use to lift the oysters, to curate the oysters, to harvest them, and all that stuff.
Okay. Wow. Again, a lot goes into this that maybe not a lot of people have a chance to be exposed to normally, or just don't even get the chance to think about too much.
Definitely.
And I guess, this is kind of like just a follow-up. Were there any other, or any other primary startup costs that you didn't just mention, or that kind of like surprised you when you first got into the business?
I wouldn't say there's anything specific, but mm-hmm. if you say that you're gonna, if you budget to start this, to start your company or to start a oyster farm, let's say you budget $10,000,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of extra costs of things that you don't know that, depending on your site, whether that's you use a boat, well, the outboard goes down, or, the amount of money you spend on ropes or zip ties or bags to harvest oysters in. There's a lot of costs that even if you're as thorough as you can be, that are going to just appear kind of out of thin air.
Mm-hmm.
Oyster seed is one of our biggest expenses, just because, depending on how much seed you get, if seed is, 2.5 cents a piece, and you get 100,000 seed, well, that's $2,500.
Oh,
and there's
wow.
no guarantee that any of that is going to even survive.
Wow. That's really interesting. And again, the levels at which you have to think about this is just a little bit mind-boggling. Like, just the numbers even are a little bit mind-boggling.
Yeah, they are. They are.
And so I know you've been in the business for a few years now, and we were talking about budgeting and costs. How many years did it take you to start turning a profit on your business?
On paper, it's going to look like you're going to turn a profit the first year and the second year. And every oyster farm will tell you that's not going to be the case. But, as humans, we just think that we're going to be the ones that actually do turn the profit the first year. It took us about 3 years to start turning a profit. We didn't, everybody's going to do their business different.
Mm-hmm.
We really made sure to not take any investment from anybody. I think that's going to help us out long term, but it's kind of, it initially delayed, how much money, that we're going to be making. Mm-hmm. So the first 2 or 3 years, I was still teaching at the time. And most of my teaching salary went to the oyster farm.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm working 5 days a week, and then on the weekends going out and working on the oyster farm and spending the money that I made during the week. So it took me about 3 years, but again, that's going to depend on where you grow your oysters, how well they grow, how much you're able to sell them for. You know, we're fortunate enough to sell our oysters for a really high price point.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, so we don't have to grow as many oysters as other people. But, you know, it just really depends.
Okay. And you've kind of mentioned a few of these, but I don't know if there are any more. Like, what are reasons that you might end up with a less profitable season of oysters in 1 year, say, versus the other?
So that's a good question. And again, a lot of people, it's going to come down to site. Well, the main part is going to come down to site selection.
Mm-hmm.
So we have some farms in North Carolina that grow great oysters with great oyster farmers. But with us having these wet falls that we've been having, or wet years the last 2 years, no matter how good the oyster grows or looks, if you get a certain amount of rain that they shut down your lease, you can't sell oysters.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got guys that had great leases that had, you know, hundreds of thousands of oysters ready to be sold, and they were closed 180 days a year. So they're literally closed half the year. And then what that does is the oysters that are ready to go to market,
mm-hmm.
if you're closed for 6 weeks, those things are still going to grow. And then they get to be too big for market. So you have oysters that have survived that you've spent a lot of work on and a lot of money on that you still have to take care of because they're still out there.
Mm-hmm.
But you cannot sell them because they're either too big or your site has been closed due to rain.
Wow, and so I have to imagine like the impact of hurricanes also relates to that as well.
Yeah, definitely. You know, with hurricanes, people think the main issue with hurricanes is, infrastructure destruction. So all your gear getting messed up or blown away. What we see with hurricanes is the biggest issue is all the water that it brings. So with the water, the ocean water is warming now, we have wetter storms. So the storm is going to dump more rain than what it used to do. So that shuts down leases. What it also does is, one way, oysters are pretty hardy, but
mm-hmm.
one way in which they're not is big swings of salinity or temperature. And so if you've got, you know, let's say 25 parts per thousand salt on your farm,
mm-hmm.
okay, and the ocean is 33 to 35, just to give you some kind of scale. If we have a big storm that dumps all that rain, you know, you're looking at a 25 parts per thousand salinity dropping to 10 or to 5 parts per thousand. And, you know, you can't grow oysters in fresh water.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, you know, so when you have these big storms, it's pretty much turns the sound into a lake. And so your oysters are going to die that way from the hurricane instead of, like, you know, heavy winds and things like that that people assume is the main issue with hurricanes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's really interesting to think about the impact of a hurricane, as you said, beyond infrastructure, but actually just the impact on the water. That's really interesting.
Yeah, that's the main thing. You know, you can sink your gear or pull your gear out of the water or, you know, there's lots of things you can do to mitigate that, but you can't really do anything to mitigate low salinity drops or big salinity drops.
Mm-hmm. And so you mentioned, like, the impacts on, like, other leases. And so I was wondering, is aquaculture businesses common in your area? Like, not necessarily just other people who work with clam or work with oysters, but people who work with, say, like, clams or crabs or anything like that?
I think it's definitely becoming more common. Where we are specifically, I think there's more and more leases popping up. Currently, we're the only leaseholders on Harker's Island.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing it spread. It's an industry that's in its infancy, and it's, it's whether you're doing clams, little neck clams, Venus sunray clams, scallops, oysters, any kind of aquaculture with bivalves or shellfish,
mm-hmm.
it is really growing in this state, and people are making a lot of money.
And so with this growth, I was wondering if you could think back to when you first opened your business and what kind of made you decide to start working with oysters?
For me, it was, I just have such a passion for our state in North Carolina. And when I realized that our waters, the coast, are relatively undeveloped, which makes for pristine water, I just kind of combined that with also my love for seafood and specifically eat oysters, you know, I mean, they're delicious. And so it was kind of a win-win because we grow such great oysters here. You know, I think that the state and the people of the state deserve to have fresh shellfish, and I think we deserve to kind of have a name for ourselves so the rest of the country knows how great North Carolina is.
I like the motivation to spread how cool North Carolina is and what all we have here resource-wise. I think that's really interesting and good.
Yeah, it's true. I've been all over the world, and North Carolina is my favorite place.
That's so great to hear. And so, again, talking a little more about, like, the business itself, did you know someone who was in the business and to, like, kind of go to as kind of like a mentor to ask questions and get advice from? And then as someone who's been in the business for a little while now, what kind of advice would you have for someone starting this kind of aquaculture?
Well, when I first got into it, there really wasn't, you couldn't even really do a quick Google search and find North Carolina farmers.
Wow.
The way that, you know, we didn't even have a shellfish program to join. So what I had to do is finish another degree and then go to the Virginia Institute of Marine Science. Mm-hmm. They have oyster genetics and aquaculture program there. So I went there and I learned as much as I could. And then as part of that program, they connect you with other farmers across the U.S., and one of the farmers that I was fortunate enough to be connected with was Dr. James Morris. He works with his father, Jimmy, at in Sea Level, when they've got one of the top oyster farms in the state, and he kind of took me, I wouldn't say under his wing, but he at least offered advice, and then we actually purchased a lease that he was getting rid of. We were able to purchase that and start our oyster farm. So Dr. Morris was huge in terms of getting us started. In terms of advice, you know, guys are, at this stage of the industry, we're not necessarily competing with each other. Mm-hmm. So guys have been, you know, upfront with giving each other information and asking questions. You know, if you're interested in that kind of stuff, going to aquaculture conferences and getting involved, whether it's the North Carolina Shellfish Growers Association or anything like that that you can do, you'll meet these people, and everybody's been pretty nice and offers. You know, we kind of all help each other when we have issues. And then advice that maybe I would give to guys starting the farm is, I guess I can just speak for myself. I'm not sure this is necessarily the smartest advice for everybody, but do everything on your own and be prepared to work hard. And, it's kind of as a backup plan. Just make sure you outwork every other person. So whether your oysters grow or they don't grow, or, you know, you have lots of issues, if you outwork everybody, you're going to be, you're going to see some success at some level. Mm-hmm. Not anything, not just oyster farming.
Oh, that's good to hear that the community is overall pretty, like, supportive and helpful for new growers.
Yeah.
That's good to hear.
Yeah.
And so, kind of, as thinking about, you know, like, new people starting this business, so what's a challenge you encountered that you didn't anticipate?
The biggest challenge I can think of is our first year, we lost about 90% of our oysters.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we had this something called summer mortality happens. It's, again, you know, a lot of people that are a lot smarter than me are working on the solution. so I'd say for me, the biggest challenge has been, you know, working your butt off, working for a year and a half, you know, getting these oysters that look beautiful and taste great, and then them all dying within about 3 or 4 weeks.
That's devastating.
It is. You really have to, you know, when something like that happens and you're broke because, you know, everything that you had worked on is now dead that you'd spent money on, having to, again, spend more money on buying more oyster seed and about to spend more time and effort. And, you know, to me, that's that's been the most challenging.
Okay. And then just kind of one last question to kind of wrap everything up. So even despite all the challenges, and I know you've learned a lot as your business has grown and as you've been in it for a while, would you start it again?
Definitely. I still feel, you know, we've been a farm for about 5 years, and I still feel like we're just getting started. Every year, you know, we're kind of trending up. Every year we're growing. Every year the industry's growing. Every year the state's getting more recognition. So, not only would I do it again, I feel like we barely just got started.
That's such a great way to look at it, and I'm glad you feel that way, because, I mean, you clearly seem to have a passion for working with these oysters and for growing your business, which I think is great.
Thanks.
Yeah. And again, I just want to thank you so much for doing the interview. Your insight has been incredibly helpful.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm honored to be a part of it, and hope we can get a lot of good folks into the industry.
Me too. And so I think this wraps everything up, and again, just thank you so much, and feel free to contact me if you have any questions about anything, or if you want updates on the mariculture lesson plans.
Yeah, yeah. Is the interview over?
Yes.
Okay.